So, like I said, I talk to threat actors. That's part of the job. We get a lot of intelligence about the actors, about how they operate. Sometimes we even get tips on how the attack happened. And a very popular method of attack is to go after not one company, but after a service provider that has multiple companies that they service. And what complicates an investigation like that when you have a bunch of customers that were attacked, not because of their own negligence, but because of a Achilles heel that was developed by having a third party. There's this tenuous relationship between that third party and the customer that develops once the customer realizes that they were attacked because of somebody like that. And any company that is contracting a dedicated third party for technical support, whatever it may be, should consider that as a potential weakness and vet it as part of their risk. The contracts between these entities that are drawn up will be closely examined following an incident like this to see what, if any, obligations the provider might have to be transparent with the customer about what happened, what risk their data was put at. And I've worked quite a few of these cases now on both sides. And I've, in every case, the terms in these agreements almost always turn out to be conspicuously vague on what those responsibilities are. And it unfortunately leads to this unproductive deadlock where we can't collect the data we need to perform a root cause analysis. Legals get tied up trying to decide what's the fairest way to give information to put the client back in a safe place without admitting culpability. It's very messy. So just as we like to cover how a threat actor gets into a network, it's just as relevant to look at what tricks they use once they're inside to stay inside and make sure the attack is successful. And a lot of these tricks involve what we call living off the land and using the tools that are already at the disposal, already built into a Windows computer. So a few months back, I did a highly technical sort of crash course for some IT teams to sort of show them this is how you can tell if your network is about to be attacked. And these are things that maybe antivirus wouldn't necessarily detect because it's not really relying on good old malware. So a telltale sign that there's a threat actor inside and your network is about to suffer something is the installation of an offensive PowerShell framework. The names that are most common are Empire and Cobalt Strike. And Interpreter. So these play a part in almost every big game human-operated ransomware attack, and even in some low-level attacks because they're frankly not that hard to operate. And if you're not familiar with these frameworks, they're what penetration testers use to try to find the weak spots in a network and give a report on how to fix them. These are the frameworks that get installed sometimes within a few hours of an attack, sometimes within a few days. And the installation of them does leave a footprint, even though the rest of it is very sneaky and hard to detect. And one of the places it leaves a footprint is in the Windows logs on your computer. So if you were to open the system log on your own computer, you should see a lot of the things like what you see on the left there. Okay, you have your McAfee firewall getting installed. This is all normal. What you should not see is something like what is on the right, because that is Meterpreter shell being executed in advance of a Ryuk attack. It's basically establishing a backdoor that they can use to come in. And because it's heavily, you can see it's gibberish, it's compressed, it's not going to trigger defensive action. AV can't read that. And attackers have really started to move away from doing anything in plain text and doing it all like this in a way that's obfuscated. And this leads right into the next slide. Things like Windows PowerShell have been leveraged by ransomware actors for years, and they're still very popular. But what we're seeing is actually new and creative techniques, techniques that are more like an advanced persistent threat group. And by that, I mean we're seeing ransomware actors use methods that don't just stick to one plan, but they have multiple plans on how to get in and how to stay in. Just a couple of months ago, we had two cases back to back, different types of ransomware, a Ryuk ransomware case and a Doppelpaymer case, where the actors leveraged something called the Background Intelligent Transfer Service, or BITS, to download their malware to hundreds of machines at once, single click. When it's being used correctly, BITS downloads updates for things in the background, like your Google Chrome or your Adobe Flash. And those downloads are whitelisted or ignored by antivirus by default. And what these attackers did was schedule a job to just download their malware using BITS to get around that security safeguard. And what was fascinating to me about finding this was that this method of sneaking around BITS has been around for years, but we have never seen ransomware use it in the wild until a couple of months ago. And we saw it in two different groups a couple of weeks apart. The good news is if you have behavior-based tools in your environment, like a Next-Gen AV, Carbon Black, CrowdStrike, SentinelOne, you can employ alerts for this kind of activity and shut it down. So there's certainly mitigation measures. You just have to have the right tools in place and the right personnel behind them.
And Lizzie, why don't we take a brief digression for a couple of questions, which I think are related. Someone had asked if the hackers are creating their own algorithms and there's a market for it. I know you've spoken a little bit in the past about ransomware as a service and some custom tools that are out there. It might be related to what you're discussing now.